Welcome to Business Trip, a podcast exploring the future of mental health and wellness. I'm Greg Kubin, alongside my co-host, Matthias Serebrinski. We're partners at SciMed Ventures, a venture fund investing in mental health. 5-MeO-DMT is often called the God molecule. At high doses, people report complete ego dissolution and being one with the universe, all within 30 minutes, typically. Is there a place for 5-MeO-DMT in the Western medical system? In today's episode, we chat with Steve Rio, a 5-MeO-DMT practitioner who started a retreat center in Canada called Enfold. Steve has a gentle demeanor, and every time I've met him, either in person or on Zoom, he's wearing a crisp white t-shirt that evokes something pure. In this episode, we'll discuss the 5-MeO experience, its history, and the protocol Steve and his wife have developed. We also explore the potential clinical applications and the viability of a pharma business model for this potent psychedelic. Let's break on through to today's episode. So today on the podcast, we have Steve Rio, who is the founder of the Enfold Institute and somebody who has worked deeply with a compound called 5-MeO-DMT. My first question for you, Steve, is among all the psychedelic compounds that are available to us, why 5-MeO?
It's a good question. A couple of reasons. One, my first 5-MeO-DMT experience, there was like a before Steve and an after Steve. And while, you know, I think a lot of psychedelics can have that impact, this was quite different. This was like a level of precision, clarity, awareness that I'd never experienced on any other psychedelic or substance of any kind. It just really made an impact. And there's certain qualities that I'm sure we'll get into today that really resonated with my wife and I's approach to spiritual work, to healing work, and to therapy, that it just really resonated in the way that this medicine interacts with you and what it shows you. The third reason is just that we also found it quite difficult to find people who were working with this medicine in a way that felt robust and felt like a really safe container. And now there's a few more that we've found, but at the time it was quite difficult to find people who we felt were holding this medicine with the level of reverence necessary. And so it felt important to bring that to light and to do that in a way that was more visible, more above ground.
That third point, there's an entrepreneurial angle to it in that when you saw that there was nobody doing it in a way that you thought the world needed, and that kind of propelled you into offering.
Yeah, for sure. That's the classic entrepreneurial, you know, scratch your own itch. And we had our very first experience, my wife and I, we have quite a lot of meditation experience and other work. And so the way the container was held for our first experience was a little bit loose, and we were fine, but a couple of our friends who had the experience were really thrown off, and there was no integration. So we kind of gathered people up and brought them back to our place and just informally started doing integration. And I think that, yeah, that was the entrepreneurial light bulb in some ways that said there's an opportunity here. I think this medicine may be fairly misunderstood.
Can you describe the experience?
It's funny. I think a lot of psychedelics, people talk about them as being ineffable, but I actually think that most psychedelics are quite effable. And I think the 5-MeO that stretches into a realm that is very hard to describe. But what I can say is that it sits in its own realm of experience compared to other psychedelics in a number of ways. One is that it's, for most people, very few visuals. Oftentimes people experience some visual blast at the beginning. When we vaporize, it's very fast onset, and people will often experience, you know, some fractaling or something like that. But after that, there's no real visual experience for most people. And there's very little story. It's like this felt sense. It's a very somatic medicine. And at the highest doses, it's the only medicine that I'm aware of that gives you an absolute direct non-dual experience. And so that's where it really puts it in its own category. And by non-dual, I mean the sense of you completely dissolving, and there is no you having an experience. And then you return from somewhere and there's this rush of information and you start to download it as you return. But there's like this pure opening. And generally what happens at those moments of the pure non-dual experience when your mind is completely offline is the body opens up and there's this deep nervous system release. There's this energetic release. It's a huge catharsis that's very characteristic and very, very important in the work that we do.
You mentioned this idea of non-dual states, and all goes back to this idea of 5-MeO sitting in a different experience space, or as some people call it, an atypical psychedelic, from the pharmacology, from the experience perspective, from maybe the risk profile as well. It's very distinct than psychedelics, where it would feel like with other psychedelic medicines, you can work through something that's stuck or going on. And when you mentioned these non-dual states, it feels like closer to meditation than the typical psychedelic experience.
Yeah, there's a lot of complexity in there because we work with it in a wide range of doses. So like from very light dose range up to a very intense dose range. And we work vaporized with vaporization. We also work with intramuscular. We're, I think, maybe some of the only folks working above ground in the world right now with intramuscular. And so intramuscular actually has quite a different profile. But what I can say kind of consistently is that beyond the full release dose, what's described as the full release dose or this pure non-dual dose, you do have awareness and there can be, it's not like typical psychedelics where you're in your mind and you're working through stories and you're thinking about when you were five and, oh, that happened and it connecting dots. There's not really that, but there is an awareness. So there's some sort of therapeutic process. But yeah, at the highest doses, it's often compared to like what's referred to as samadhi, or the kind of deepest states of meditation, samadhi, like from Hindu religion or mysticism or from Buddhism, these kind of states of pure non-dual awareness that people spend their whole lives sitting in caves trying to achieve. So there's this like super deep experience. And I think also, unlike other psychedelics, I would say most of the integration, most of the processing actually happens after, where I feel like when you're in ayahuasca or in some of the more traditional tryptamines or even MDMA or other things like that, you're doing a lot of the processing in the journey. And then there's, of course, integration, but you're kind of connecting dots in it where this, most of that's happening afterwards.
Why a non-dual experience can be a positive experience or a therapeutic experience? What's, you know, what's going on there? Why should someone embark in that journey?
So first of all, it really depends on how much spiritual work or other psychedelic work you've done really lends to how much you're going to actually be able to absorb or remember the non-dual, like not that you can remember a non-dual experience, but as you're coming back, there's kind of this connection to that space. So some people don't remember it at all. And it's mostly this deeply felt sense of connection to something greater. The therapeutic value or the reason it's so powerful is that so many people are coming for healing and they're coming to work on their lives and they're working on these symptoms that are existing in their lives, maybe in relationships or in their relationships with themselves or their family or their work. And then they have this experience of realizing that they are connected to the entire universe or to God or to whatever language is comfortable for anyone. And there's something that just, it zooms you out. Like it gives you this meta level glimpse that you are part of something much greater. And so I think for all humans, there's some desire to want a sense of meaning, a sense of connection, a sense of purpose. I think we're wired for that. This gives you some very high level meta version of that. For some, it's a really beautiful thing and a deeply moving thing. Sometimes it's actually quite a challenging thing for people to comprehend because, again, they came to heal trauma or they came to fix their relationship with their spouse, you know, work through depression, and suddenly they get this glimpse of the deepest spiritual experience you could possibly imagine. And they didn't necessarily sign up for that, right? So actually the contextual processing of that can be really challenging for people. Awakening experiences can be very dysregulating, in fact. Like, I think they have huge potential, but they can be really dysregulating as well.
We'll definitely talk about risks because it's, I would argue, even more important than in other psychedelics. I want to also go back to the concept of a deep nervous system release or this, what I interpret as somatic component of the medicine. Can you speak about one, the uniqueness of 5-MeO in that aspect.
All psychedelics have the potential for that. 5-MeO, especially when vaporized, there's a few different ways of consuming 5-MeO. Most people are doing vaporized if it's kind of underground or where people are accessing it now. Most people are vaporizing, and vaporizing is you inhale the vapor. It has a 5 or 10 second onset. Each dose that you might take is anywhere from 5 or 10 minutes up to about 25, 30 minutes, depending on the level of dose. It has a very high peak. It's like a rocket ship, so straight up, and then a fairly fast metabolization. When we work with intramuscular, it's more of like an hour-long journey. It's about a 3 to 5 minute onset, and it's more of like a plane taking off and landing, or maybe a space shuttle because it's pretty intense. And then there's a few other formats. But when we vaporize in at the very highest levels, like I say, when the mind finally goes offline, the body just opens up, the nervous system activates, there's this huge opening. And what we find is that without having to have any storyline or anything, like if there's trauma stored in the body, it just starts coming out. The trip often looks like, if you're experiencing someone, people might start screaming, shrieking, toning, sweating, crying, laughing, spitting, sometimes vomit. Like, it's just like the whole body just goes, whoosh, it just opens. And I mean, for some people, they're very still, as we often see these huge full body tremors start to begin. Like the whole body just starts vibrating. These huge fascial trauma releases start to happen. And we've just seen it as this, like we just access into the nervous system, and the nervous system finally unclenches and releases all this stuff. And it's not like you're experiencing the story of when you were 5 and something happened. There's nothing. There's just an emotional and energetic sensation and experience. And what people report coming out of that experience is this sudden deepening of interoception, or the ability to connect with their body or to feel their body from within. People report suddenly being able to feel their breath or being able to breathe into the body. It's like the diaphragm finally unclenches. Like all of these somatic results just kind of happen. And it's not like the person processed some specific trauma intellectually. It just happened in the body. The body just opens, and it can leave people feeling incredibly calm. It can leave people feeling incredibly raw. And what's interesting is there's the long tail of the integration experience of psychedelics, with 5-MeO, which is the contextualization of what they experienced. But these immediate effects are really remarkable in that oftentimes certain habits just change immediately. They just stop vaping. They just stop cannabis. They just stop drinking. Phobias or fears just are gone. Like, we had one fellow, it was super interesting. He had some people in his family pass, and fairly suddenly, and he somehow developed this phobia of driving over bridges, to the point where he would drive an hour and a half out of his way to avoid a bridge. And the next week he just found himself driving on a bridge and realized, it didn't even cross my mind. It's just over. So these kind of just shifts in the nervous system happen, which is like really remarkable. And then, of course, there's consistent work to maintain, I think, those shifts that happen. But there's this really remarkable thing that happens very quickly.
Is there an explanation or a hypothesis from a biological perspective, let's call it from a scientific, materialistic perspective, on this somatic relief, like what's happening in the body from a biological perspective?
I'm not aware of one. I think there's some indication of why the phenomenology of 5-MeO is so different. Like, for instance, why there's so few visuals. There's an indication that it's because we're hitting the 5-HT1A receptor like 1,000-fold more than the HT2A receptor, which is more common with the tryptamine. So that there's something that points to why there's no visual experience in some of that. But this somatic release is really just, my best understanding is, you take the mind completely offline. You take the full control system, kind of part of the control system offline, and the nervous system finally just does whatever it would naturally do without the egoic mind dampening that. But that's certainly not based on science. It's based on my experience of witnessing hundreds of people.
Yeah, it sounds like the dam breaks and the water goes everywhere.
We actually use that analogy quite often, if that, like, we are putting cracks in the dam, or we are opening the dam. And for some people, the dam opens right up. And that's when we sometimes see these multi-day releases that happen for people. It's really intense.
As we're talking about the multi-day release, it makes me think about 5-MeO in the Western medical establishment and what kind of protocols would need to be put into place to properly hold those individuals such that they feel safe and resourced. How does the activity that you're doing, which we haven't really gotten into, but would you say is it in the gray? Is it in the underground? Like, where do you put it? And then let's talk about the translation of how this potentially translates to being a model of care as prescribed by a doctor or physician around the world.
We consider ourselves above ground work based in both spirituality and modern science. And we're doing our own research with UHN, University of Toronto, and a number of folks. We're building education. We're doing lots of things. So we also work in Canada, where 5-MeO-DMT is currently unregulated. So we are certainly in some version of gray zone because we're not a licensed or regulated space. But we think of ourselves as just a very typical above ground service. But in terms of your second question, yeah, it really concerns me a lot. I've worked with 5-MeO-DMT. It's really a passion. And as far as psychedelics go, I would prefer that it moves much slower than the rest of them because I'm really worried about this integration into the medical model. In fact, we were approached by an investor a few years ago who owns an investment arm that owns a whole bunch of ketamine clinics and things, and they wanted to invest in us to take our protocol and plug it into ketamine clinics. And I just told them, like, that's just not going to work, because they were thinking, oh yeah, it's fast acting. People can come for a 1-hour session and work with 5-MeO-DMT and then be on their way. And it was a very short conversation for me. And I think this is common across psychedelics, is that there's so much emphasis on the molecule and what the molecule is doing versus what the entire experience is doing and what the container is doing. And so what I can imagine happening, if let's say 5-MeO-DMT becomes FDA approved in a clinic model and you can go and do a dose of 5-MeO in a clinic, a few things could happen. One is that you end up with a lot of people who actually have traumatic or traumatizing experiences from that because they aren't properly contextualized. Their nervous system isn't necessarily open or relaxed enough for that experience. And this thing just like hits them like a stick of dynamite kind of thing, you know? That's happening all over Mexico right now, all over Cancun and stuff like that. Like, you can drop into these places and smoke 5-MeO and leave. And what we're hearing from people is that, you know, imagine going into some space, being handed a pipe, you take this huge hit of 5-MeO, you have a non-dual experience, your nervous system explodes. And then an hour later, you're back out on the street with your cell phone trying to call an Uber or figure out what you're supposed to do for dinner or think about your kids or think, you know, it's a very dysregulating experience. There's a lot of concern about how that's going to fit into a medical model that doesn't really have the space for multi-day processes like that.
Can you talk about your protocol?
Yeah, for sure. So we have a pretty thorough screening process. We screen out at least 1 in 5 people that approach us now. And so we're screening for a few things. There's medical, there's some psychological issues. There's some current conditions of your lifestyle. Like, do you have some support system in place? Are you generally stable in your life at this moment? Have you done sufficient spiritual, introspective, therapeutic work leading up to this point? Because 5-MeO is really just not a starting point for that process. So we kind of look at all of those factors. Once you've passed that sort of step, we do a preparation call, which is usually 90 minutes or so. We have a thorough intake form, which is basically about 60 to 90 minutes. We do a group call with the group that you'll be part of. We do a group preparation call. We have a series of videos that we take that's mandatory to go through that walks you through every aspect of the process. It gives you some context for how to work with the medicine. We have a 2-week preparation program. And then for a lot of our clients these days, we're also doing additional prep sessions, additional coaching sessions, basically. And so a lot of people we're actually working with in a more thorough preparation container Then they show up with us. They're here with us from anywhere from 3 to 5 nights. The minimum we do is 3 nights. So you basically arrive on the first night. It's a landing. We have dinner together. We do some breath work. We do some orientation as a group. It's really a chance for the person to land physically, to start building physical trust with us. Because I think what we see is that the whole process is a matter of building trust with your nervous system, helping you feel relaxed and safe and open enough to have as deep of experience as possible. So the first night is really grounding and some somatic work, dinner, talk therapy kind of stuff, like group conversation. Medicine day is the next day. Each person has a private ceremony, a 2-hour long session for each person. And it's private. It's my wife and I and the person we're working with. And the rest of the day is a day of silence for everyone. So we ask everyone to observe silence so that they can be introspective, so that they're not comparing each other, comparing their experience to one another, so that they have time to process. We have a sauna and a cold plunge and beautiful food, and we're in nature so people can go for walks. I should mention too that our retreats, we have everybody wind off caffeine so that there's no caffeine served at the retreat. There's basically, we wind people off all substances pretty much, like any cannabis, alcohol, caffeine. Medications are a different story, but our retreat is caffeine free. It's also technology free. So there's no phones. Everybody's offline for the whole time. So we have our ceremony day. And then the third day is an integration day where we take people through a couple of different somatic processes using sauna and cold plunge, using breath work. We do some group work. We do some one-on-one work with each people. We do some massage. And it's really just a day to continue allowing this somatic opening to continue or to conclude, depending on where people are at. And then they leave the next day. And then we have an extended version of that that basically has a second round of medicine as well. I'll say too, just afterwards, we offer 2 weeks of on-call support for every guest. So that just means call us, text us, message us anytime as much as needed. It's not like we're not an emergency care center, so we do go to sleep and turn our phones off, but we're basically on call for everybody for 2 weeks. We have a minimum of one integration call individually, group integration call. We have an integration program. Like, we have a whole bunch of materials. And then we have this beautiful platform with all sorts of readings from lots of different spiritual traditions and science and sleep, information about sleep and nervous system recovery and all this kind of nutrition and all sorts of stuff that they have access to as well.
So integration is quite complex and thorough. I'm curious if you have certain recommendations or certain practices that pair really well with 5-MeO from an integration perspective.
Yeah. One of the things we tell everybody coming through this experience is that it part of what you're signing up for the unknown. And I think that's true for all psychedelics, right? Like, you never know what's going to be revealed. You don't necessarily know how you're going to feel afterwards. But 5-MeO-DMT is, there's a pretty dramatic continuum of outcomes of how people feel in the acute aftercare phase, like in the days and couple of weeks afterwards. So the first thing is really just making sure that people are prepared for the chance that they are one of the folks, the 1 in 10 people that have these huge energetic openings. It's kind of like what people describe when they talk about a Kundalini awakening or something like that, where everything is just going. They might have really challenging sleeps, repeated reactivations, which is basically the experience of being back in the peak of the medicine experience, usually during the sleep cycle, usually as they're drifting into sleep or as they're at the peak of the sleep cycle through the middle of the night. So people can have lots of reactivations. They can have big emotional releases that come up. So the first thing is just making sure that people understand that that's what they're signing up for and that that's a possibility. And then making sure that they have the tools for whether it's like some somatic practice, a breathwork practice, some kind of tools that they can use to work with. But also just the on-call support is really key, just knowing that they're not alone and that if they feel like they're going crazy, because a week later they're still having these big insights and big epiphanies, that they can reach out and we can help ground them. Some people need more grounding activities because like their energy is just really open and really big. And so grounding breathwork practice, like slow breathing practices, evening routines, baths, saunas to help them what we call land the plane, bring everything back down, keep coming back to the body. So a lot of body awareness practices, that kind of stuff. For other people, the process has opened, but there's clearly more to be released and they have the capacity in which to do so. Like they feel stable enough to do that. And we'll give them upregulated breath work is really powerful for that. So doing 30-minute deep breathing practices that bring them into trance states or psychedelic states to continue releasing energy, to continue like completing this energetic process that has begun. If you go back to your regular pace of work and you don't create space to process this experience, if you don't slow down in the mornings or throughout your day to just connect with your body again, the depth of this experience, you will lose it. And so a lot of our work is helping to connect the dots between, okay, this is how I want to feel and this is what I know to be true now. When those mental patterns come back, how do I pay attention to those? How do I create awareness so that I can start shifting the habitual mind patterns, which is an ongoing, it's a longer term process.
I want to plug in Steve as an amazing breathwork facilitator. Actually, I found you on the Othership app, and there are a couple of sessions that you're guiding that are, some of them are up-regulating sessions and some are down-regulating, and they are fantastic. So for everyone that's interested, you can go to the Othership.us.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, it's been fun making all those breathworks because I'm a musician as well. So all of our sessions, all of the breath work we do is all built with music that we've produced and we've recorded in-house. And so that's been really fun.
So a couple more follow-up things around the protocol or afterthoughts based on what you mentioned after protocol. The first one is because the protocol that you mentioned is very intense from human hour perspective. I'm curious if you have thoughts around affordability or accessibility about this, and if you can envision ways where this may be less of a high touch and so more people may be able to access it.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer to that because just in our experience, I kind of think of 5-MeO-DMT, if you put it in the kind of list with other psychedelics, it's like the absolute most, it's like doing brain surgery. It's the most potential for risk. It's the most potential for gain. I think the one way that it becomes affordable is that it becomes more of a community practice, right? Where you have experts in the space serving in community. Our experience is not cheap, but I think it would be a lot more expensive if we also had parent companies and a bunch of shareholder structures, or we were on the NASDAQ. Because I would say like our experience is expensive and we don't make any money, to be honest. Like this has been the worst job from a financial perspective I've ever had. I took a 70% pay cut to do this work. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. This is my life's work, and this is like an absolute gift to be doing it, but it is the most exhausting thing I've ever done. Like we just joke that we are always tired now. That's just part of the deal. And because it's so intense, I think also part of holding this in the proper reverence and doing it at the right level is you can't hold a group every week. You can't go back to back like that. So we have to space it out. So yeah, affordability, really tough.
I appreciate the humility and you being humble and saying, hey, I don't know. I feel like many people could answer with some BS theory on how to scale stuff. And there may or may not be, but I appreciate you being open to the possibility that there are things that just don't scale.
Yeah. This 2 weeks of on-call support, sometimes it's months of on-call support. It's not every day for months, but I have hundreds of people, you know, in my WhatsApp, and they're popping up with questions, and we consider ourselves a community of care. We have free integration circles that people can come to forever once they've been to retreat. And so we're trying to figure out ways to basically create network effect. And we have a peer network of people who have been through the experience that volunteer to talk to others. Because I think one of the hugest pieces of this medicine in all psychedelics and 5-MeO just a little bit accentuated is that you need others who have been through the experience to resonate with. A big part of this is creating community. So that's, I'd say, one way we can scale up the support network, at least the kind of fabric that supports everybody.
I think what's interesting with what you're doing is because there isn't really a documented lineage, there isn't like a millennia of protocols and history here. So you're figuring this out and creating it again, entrepreneurially as you go. Can you just briefly talk about what we know about the history of 5-MeO?
Yeah. So first of all, it is found in some seeds and plants, and it has been found in very low dosage in, like, there is some traditional use potentially in snuffs, like where it's like seeds or leaves are ground up into with some tobacco and used as a snuff. So there is some history of that, but even a lot of that is potentially not quite accurate, like where a lot of people just think of 5-MeO-DMT as the primary active ingredient in those snuffs, but actually it's bufotenin and other things. And in fact, like a friend of ours who has basically a research and development company recently worked with some indigenous folks and were given some to analyze in their lab, and there was no 5-MeO-DMT in it at all. So anyway, there is some lineage, there is some history of that existing. So that is the only known sort of long-term knowledge of 5-MeO-DMT. But as far as working with it at high doses, it was actually being used synthetically before it was being used organically. And that basically started in the 70s. Going a little bit further back, it was the first known synthesis of 5-MeO-DMT was 1936. A couple of Japanese researchers, not necessarily trying to do psychedelic things, but just creating compounds and documenting things. And then sometime in the 70s, people started working with synthetic 5-MeO-DMT. And I think that also people started discovering that it was available in the Sonoran Desert toad, which is a toad that exists on the Arizona-Mexico Sonoran Desert region. So it only exists in one region of the world. And I think people started discovering these toads. Back then, these toads were like rampant pests that would come out a couple months a year and be everywhere. Like if you lived in that region, you had a pool, there'd be hundreds in your pool and you'd be trying to keep them out of your pool and out of your backyard. So people started working with synthetic somewhere in the 70s and started working with the toad around that time. Then in 1984, this guy named Ken Nelson, under the pen name Albert Most, created this pamphlet called Bufo Alvarius. And he did this beautiful pamphlet with these illustrations his friend made. And he talks about how to find toads, how to milk toads, how to synthesize 5-MeO-DMT. He describes the experience the best way he can. And it's actually a pretty amazing set of information. And he started distributing that widely in the 80s. And I think that's when it became a lot more well-known.
Just to clarify, the toad, the Sonoran Desert toad, scientific name is Bufo alvarius. So when we talk about Bufo alvarius, we're talking about the toad that secretes 5-MeO.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's probably just worth describing that. So a lot of people talking about smoking the toad or smoking Bufo. A lot of people just call 5-MeO-DMT Bufo, and that's, they're describing basically the glands of this toad while it's in hibernation start to swell with this venom. And so they'll have all these bumps on their shoulders and their back, and you can essentially milk them. You can basically press them and the venom sprays out. You can spray that onto glass and you let it dry, and then people smoke toad venom. And toad venom has anywhere from 15 to 30% 5-MeO-DMT content. So it's in pretty high concentrate. And then it has a whole bunch of other alkaloids and some bufotenin and some other things in it. More and more people are working with synthetic because the toads are being eradicated at a really alarming rate. So they're essentially, they're not extinct yet, but they're getting there. There's some concerns around control of the region with cartel suddenly trying to restrict toad access. And the other thing is that synthetic is it's quite an easy compound to produce. It is a much safer compound, I would say, to work with because you can be much more careful about dosing. We're talking about the strongest psychedelic on the planet. And so the difference between 5 and 10 milligrams is a chasm. It's a massive difference. And so when you think about smoking Bufo, if the Bufo venom is anywhere from 15 to 30% density of 5-MeO-DMT. Most people are working with synthetic these days, but there are still a whole bunch of holdout hardcores who think that Bufo has some magical properties. My experience is that the experience between the two is virtually the same, and I can't think of a reason to harm these toads to have awakening experiences.
You mentioned variability in dosage. Is there anything to say about the dosage and the effects? Almost like with psilocybin mushrooms, you have the heroic dose, you have the museum dose. So I'm curious if there's some analogies in the 5-MeO-DMT world.
Yeah, for sure. So when I'm talking about weights, I'm talking synthetic. Basically, 2 or 3 milligrams is considered a handshake dose. That's the language used in 5-MeO-DMT, meaning that it will certainly have an effect, but it will not be necessarily completely overwhelming. So when we dose, we typically do a titrated dosing where we start at the handshake dose, 2 to 3 milligrams. So that's going to be a lighter range dose. Mid-range doses, I would say, go anywhere from about 5 milligrams up to about 9 milligrams, depending on the person. And that's often referred to as the hug. So it's handshake, hug, and full embrace. And the full embrace is really anywhere from 10 up to about 20 milligrams. The highest range that we actually work with is typically 16, because we find that that is generally after a couple of other doses is a high enough dose to guarantee a full non-dual experience. When it's vaporized, is that it's not really dependent on weight. It's not dependent on, there's not much physiology to point to. For us, it's much safer to start at a low dose, see how people receive the medicine, see how some people find 3 milligrams really profound. Some people feel it like they barely feel it at all. They might have some tingling or some sparkling or a bit of visuals. We've seen very large men take quite small doses to have huge releases. And we've seen small women take much bigger doses sometimes to get all the way to a full release. It's pretty interesting that way.
Yeah. What comes up for me again is how that could present complications in the medical model.
Yep. Intramuscular is going to be a little bit different. Like we definitely see a little bit more similar to the way people dose ketamine, but even the way people are talking about ketamine and talking about MDMA, I think if you're a practitioner and you've been working with that medicine a long time, you know that physiology plays some role, of course, especially when substances are digested, either whether it's like going through the bloodstream, like an intramuscular injection, or whether you're ingesting the substance, there's going to be some physiological perspective, but there's also a big variability. And some people are just much more sensitive. They're much more open to letting go into the experience and need less medicine. So I already think in the medical model, it's overly rigid and it doesn't make a ton of sense. I get why some standards need to exist, but in terms of vaporizing, like it's interesting to see that GH Research is, at least they've done their first trial. I don't know if they've gone on to do more trials, but they were doing it in a vaporized model. And that's where you really see a huge variability in how people respond.
GH Research, they've done a phase 2A clinical trial. The data were really promising, although very small. So I'm curious if you can speak a little bit more about what's happening on that clinical model, right? What companies are doing to the best of your knowledge?
The three main folks that seem to have actually started real trials are USONA, GH Research, Beckley, and then there's a few others working on things that are in the coming. What's interesting is that USONA is working on intramuscular. GH was doing vaporized. Beckley is doing an intranasal, meaning like, I guess they're probably doing a nasal spray, which is a pretty solid way of administering 5-MeO as well. But it's pretty interesting that they're doing three different methods, all have different onsets, different phenomenology, have quite different experiences. A lot of times we simplify a substance down to just, oh, it's 5-MeO and they're all doing research on the same drug. But in fact, they're actually going to be having pretty different results in their clinic. What will be similar and what most people have done so far is safety trials. So looking at the metabolization, the toxicology, those types of things. And from what I understand, 5-MeO is incredible in that it metabolizes within 3 hours, like even when used intramuscularly. So it basically fully metabolizes out of the system within 3 hours. Very low toxicology. Looks like it's generally very safe. One of those folks we were actually brought in to advise on their clinical trial structure and how to think about doing this for a clinical trial, how to administer 5-MeO for a clinical trial, which was a very challenging conversation because they were talking about dosing from these very light doses all the way up into full embrace dose, like very intense experience doses, while having somebody in a hospital bed of some kind, drawing blood for safety trials throughout. So they're hooked up to catheters and whatnot. And they were trying to do so without any therapeutic model around it because they're basically just trying to test the drug. And that for us presented a lot of ethical concerns. So we gave as much advice as we could and that was about that. But yeah, it looks like, I think that Beckley has just moved into phase two trials where they're looking at TRD, treatment resistant depression. They're looking at alcohol use disorder. They're pretty early in those trials. So I think we're just going to start seeing what that looks like. Again, like part of the reason we decided to come above ground and put our brand out there and put our names out there and all of this was because what our hopes is that if folks like this are going to be doing drug development, I just hope that they will come find folks like us who have been doing on the ground protocol development and design around the actual delivery of care of this medicine so that we could combine best practices, right? So like, what I'm not aware of is any of these groups in anywhere close to thinking about delivery of care or the protocol model. They're really focusing on drug delivery methodologies and patents. You know, and then there's a few other companies who are trying to do derivative 5-MeO derivatives, saying that they're going to be more safe, that are slight variations from 5-MeO DMT, which kind of makes me, I don't know, that's where I get really skeptical.
So with everything we discussed around the need for a lot of holding the person while they're going through this experience, the very different folks will have different responses to a fixed dose, and that it's very hard to predict that beforehand. What is your perspective around this being actually approved by FDA and successfully going through clinical trials and ultimately becoming a medicine or a treatment that is offered in a clinic?
My guess is that high dose 5-MeO DMT will remain very elusive in any type of clinical model. I know, for instance, that USONA had originally planned to do 18 milligram intramuscular doses in their first round of testing. I believe that they maxed out at 13 milligrams. Like, I've done 16 milligrams intramuscular. It's the most intense thing I've ever experienced. And I've done a lot of different psychedelics. You know, I've done ayahuasca in the jungle and I've done all the things. It was by far the absolute most intense thing. So I think that high dose 5-MeO DMT is going to be really tough. It's like the Lego blocks don't fit together in my mind. I can totally see it. Pharma product is like low dose 5-MeO nasal spray for mood enhancement, low dose use coming in for these kind of like mid-range doses in a clinical setting for an hour, like these kind of top-up kind of doses, and that can be taken regularly, that fits into the financial model of the pharmaceutical model. You know, that's what I could see happening.
Like the Spravato model.
Yeah, the Spravato 5-MeO, right? Like there'll be the 5-MeO Spravato, exactly. Like I think that we're maybe done the first wave of big money, like the big money's kind of come and gone. The first wave of money into psychedelics has happened and we're maybe going into a second, more mature wave. Do you guys believe that started or where are we at? Where are we at in the waves here, guys?
Yeah, I would definitely say we're in the second to third wave, right? The second wave being tweaks of the known compounds and doing so to make them more either efficacious or fitting more into the clinical model. And then the third wave is arguably, you know, removing the trip altogether, but still having the potential neurobiological benefits. But having said that, I think that there still is, to be clear, money being invested into the first wave companies. They're definitely the furthest along. But yeah, I would say at least the early stage venture money has moved into the second and third wave. And that's what we know best.
Yeah, I'm not sure how 5-MeO DMT fits in. So we'll see, I guess. I think the other aspect, and this is true for all psychedelics, but the reason we host small groups, the reason why we host people for 3 days is that the real power in this work is that when the nervous system opens, when people have this release, that they're also in this space where there are people there caring for them. And there is this deep level of understanding of one another. And there is this deep level of human connection. And like, to me, 5-MeO DMT done in any type of clinical model without that is either just damaging or a waste of time. And I can kind of see how MDMA or other psychedelics, the sort of spiritual container can kind of be pulled away from it. But 5-MeO DMT, as soon as you start hitting certain ranges of doses, if you do not have some spiritual framing for what the person is experiencing, again, I just think you're either getting null effects or detrimental effects. I just think it's super important that we're talking about why psychedelics are so powerful, have been so powerful for so long, because in most contexts, it's about connection. It's about either a group connecting with one another or you connecting with a facilitator or a guide or a shaman or whatever the context that you're in. And that to me is like the actual meat of the experience. 5-MeO-DMT is this incredible molecule that does this incredible thing, but it's everything that's wrapped around it that actually, to me, creates the longer term results.
Okay. Well, I think we should move to the rapid fire round where we ask you questions and you do your best to reply with tweet length responses.
Oh man, I'm the worst at this tweet length thing, as you can tell already.
Let's go. How many times have you tried 5-MeO?
I've worked with 5-MeO probably 40 times or so.
Do you think we will find other psychedelics in the same way that 5-MeO is a fairly recent one?
Yeah, for sure. If we found a toad that can give you the experience of unity with the entire universe, and there's got to be something else out there. My only question would be like, do we actually need anything beyond that? But I'm sure we will.
Is city living compatible with the integration period after 5-MeO?
Depends on your calendar and your ability to plan ahead. Yeah, it's not that city living is okay, but your nervous system is definitely much more sensitive. Noise, energy, all those kind of things are much more pronounced. So it's definitely intense.
Is there such a thing as too many 5-MeO experiences?
Yes, definitely. There's lots of people who get really spun out and get very dysregulated by doing too much 5-MeO-DMT. We're actually probably the most sober facilitators that we know.
So there's the DMTX project, which is for intravenous extended states of NN-DMT. What do you think that experience would be like for an extended 5-MeO-DMT?
When you do multi-dose intramuscular 5-MeO-DMT, it can be a two-hour experience, and it is absolutely profound, not so much in meeting entities, but in meeting yourself.
What are you excited about that's happening underground from a psychedelic perspective?
I like that the underground is getting light shone into it and that ethics are improving, that there's more standards of care, there's better awareness in the general public. I generally think that harm reduction is increasing. So I think that there's lots happening there. I'm also just really happy to see, at least for us, we're constantly trying to connect with other people in who are practitioners and building communities of care and best practice. It's nice to see that happening.
What is another psychedelic that has a place in your heart?
3-MMC. It's an incredible molecule that seems to be fairly unknown, but it's unregulated in Canada. And it's kind of like MDMA, but clearer, incredible medicine for relational work.
And then one more question for me. Ken, you had mentioned the observational study with UHN. What are you trying to find out?
We are partly trying to validate what we've just seen, what we already feel like we know from seeing the work and seeing the results. But I think our major goal with our observational study is to provide a set of data that all the dosing, the length, like I take extensive notes in every session. So how long did the dose last? What were the perceived effects? What kind of purging did we see, or emotional releases did we see? What was said? All of those kind of things. What kind of music was played? Basically to document the entire container of our process so that if people want to replicate and continue the results of our study, they might start implementing more aspects of a multi-day retreat-based experience.
Awesome. Steve, this was really great interview. If you have any thoughts or closing remarks you'd like to share, the mic is yours.
It's just been a pleasure to be here. And I like the kind of merger of thinking about business, thinking about the holistic aspects of psychedelics, thinking about all of other ways that we can shift states and improve well-being. So just glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Business Trip, a podcast exploring the future of mental health and wellness. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SciMedVentures. And if you're building a company in frontier mental health, hit us up at hi@scimed.ventures, which you can find in the show notes. I'm Greg Kubin, and my co-host is Matthias Serebrinski. Our editor is Jonathan Davis, with production led by Caitlin Nair. Sound design and engineering came from Nico Ray. Our theme music is by Dorian Love, and additional music credits are in the show notes. This is Business Trip. Thanks for tripping with us. We'll see you next time.